Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody, and welcome to this installment of Linux in the Ham Shack. Linux in the Ham Shack, the most professionally run program on the internet. I want y'all to know that we are the most professionally run program on the internet. Implementation is a different matter, though. My name is Richard, KB5JBV, and welcome to our show. Let me introduce to you the technical wizard that brings this audio. Let me introduce you to the technical wizard that brings this audio to you free of charge. That would be Russ up there in Arkansas. Say hello to everybody, Russ.
Hello, everybody. This is Russ, K5TUX, coming to you live to tape or digital recording medium from between the peaks in the pine forest of north central Arkansas. And welcome to episode number 86. Of Linux in the Ham Shack. So it's been a little while. I kind of skipped last week because I had a lot going on. So how's Richard this evening?
Oh, well, it's a chilly night here in North Texas. It's unseasonably cold down here. And even worse, I guess I've decided to have a stroke because my tongue won't work. However, things are moving forward. We're taking a break this week. Selling Mary Kay like nobody's business. I'm laying around being a bum, and it's going to get active next week, but we'll talk about that. Well, you and I will talk about that later. So what's been up there in Arkansas? You know, we got a lot of people in the chat room tonight, comparatively speaking. I wouldn't think we'd have that many people go with the All-Star game going on.
Well, I guess nobody cares about baseball. Either that or Linux in the Ham Shack is better than a bunch of guys swatting a ball around.
I don't know. You may be better than Josh Hamilton, but I don't think I am.
Well, I don't know. Let's just assume we are, even though the All-Star game is real close by. I didn't get a chance to go. So we have a recording to do here, and it turns out we've got a little bit of an interview to do first up. Just so everybody knows, the audio from this phone call is a little bit noisy, but I'm going to bring Bob online right now. So welcome Bob W9YA, who's going to turn down his stream so he's not getting aphasia.
Yep. Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, good up here, too.
Normally, this time of year, we have cars melting out on the street and stuff like that, and it's, like, very cool here this evening.
You know, I almost feel like a real radio type personality having to tell somebody on the phone to turn their audio down, their radio, because, usually that's how it goes. But,
yes. Anyway.
So.
And I know better.
Well, that's okay. When I put you on hold and you can't hear anything, I understand. At least on the radio stations, they play, you know, the audio feed through the telephone. And I don't think Skype can do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check out this Skype thing.
No, I wouldn't. I'd stay away if I were you.
Okay.
It's a Microsoft proprietary thing, so I you know.
Yeah. Is it really?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh,
what?
Exactly.
Stop screwing around.
No, that wasn't me.
No, no, it wasn't you.
No, it wasn't you.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a reason why Bob W9YA is here tonight. And that's because I impugned his software a while back. Well, I kind of gather it's not your software, but you actually maintain it now. DJ1YFK was the one who wrote it. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's had about, between him and there were four or five other people between him and me before I became, I don't know if you want to call it lead or principal maintenance programmer.
You had a king of YFK test.
Yeah, something like that.
King.
And now it's principal steward.
We've had a bit of history over 5 years. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I wish I could shut my damn Skype up right now. Rather than me explain or try to explain myself, I'm going to let you do it because it'll probably make me look bad and it'll be much more entertaining for the people listening. So go ahead and tell them why you're here tonight.
Oh, well, I'm here just promoting it. It goes back a little over a year ago, and I was desperately looking for a replacement for a wonderful DOS contest logging program, specifically for Field Day, called WR9R. And with the lack of ability of being able to run DOS easily, and with computers no longer having serial and parallel ports, I was searching around for a replacement. And I really wanted three principal things in a logging program. I didn't want fancy graphics because that can get in the way, more especially when people program a mouse instead of just using the keyboard. Because when you're contest logging, you never want your fingers to leave the keyboard, if at all possible. And ideally, you're just maybe reaching over and tweaking a VFO or something. But you don't want to play a lot with the rig, and you just want to be centered on the keyboard. And one of the really neat things, if you guys have ever run, either of you guys ever run WR9R for Field Day?
I think that software probably predates my interest in Field Day.
Yeah, and I'm a paper guy.
Okay, that's fair. The really neat thing is it had really simple help. It was very simply structured, and it was very easy to use. And we found back with the club I was with in Indiana when I first started using it, that you could train somebody how to use it in about 45 seconds. And that was a huge boon on Field Day with a large operation or a medium-sized operation. You didn't need the computer guru, somebody tied to the computers to just train people. And back then, this would be in the 90s, people were just starting to do computer logging in a serious way. So I really wanted to find a replacement that didn't use a mouse, had simple graphics package to no graphics package. And I stumbled over YFK test and really, really liked it. And the author, Fabian, DJ1YFK, had made an offer that anybody who wanted to jump in and help, since it was an open source project, could jump in and help. And what I found was, as I was doing contests and correcting the code while I was in the middle of the contest, I jump out of the program, patch the code, restart the program. And I did that a lot, and the program started improving throughout last year, and I was submitting my improvements. And then long about February, a friend of mine said, you know, you really ought to sit down and correct the way it starts for a lot of the people that are in the Linux, because 5 years ago in Linux, you were expected to have a hat with two propellers and so forth. And people don't do that anymore. They get in Ubuntu and they get into the new stuff, and they really want to just be able to sit down and log. So I started making improvements in the program, and I found that since that was third week in February, I got started with it this year, doing serious corrections on the program, and I've submitted about 150 patches in the meantime, since then, ending up in about the beginning of June. And those 150 patches have moved the program right along. You guys were huge help. You pointed out where people were stumbling and getting confused. And so I kept improving it. I had input from about a dozen people about how to improve it over the last several months. And it's come now to, I think it's at rev 533 right now. And I started improving it about rev 370, 380. So that neighborhood. So there's been a lot of improvements. And it's kind of whipped into shape. It's still very, very simple. Doesn't use X, doesn't use graphics, doesn't use a mouse, has a single page help, and it's pretty easy to maneuver around once you get it running. And I'm very pleased with it. I've used it in several contests now, and it's really been whipped into shape. So that's pretty much my story, how I got involved and why I'm doing it.
Okay, well, let me get this out of the way, since we had a little bit of an email conversation a little bit ago. And the last time that I said anything on the show about YFK test, I was having my ongoing problem with getting the ARRL Field Day logger bit of it to work. And I had talked with John, EI7IG, and he went ahead and confirmed my issues with it, but only because I was under a false premise. So do you want to explain my idiocy, or do you want to let me do it?
I'm not sure exactly what you did. I will tell you this. One of the things I added was a rudimentary error checking. And some of that was in the program in certain areas. Some of it didn't exist at all. I didn't want to be able, for instance, to log in dirtbag for a call sign. So instead of being able to type in dirtbag, which you could do at one point, it does some rudimentary checking on call signs and, in fact, in all the logging fields. So in field day, you have three logging fields. You have the call, the person you're working. You have their class and their section. And if you don't type the section right, it may or may not go in. If you don't get the class right, it won't go in, although it does accept every conceivable kind of class that's available, plus some in the future. It will allow you, will expand as the ARRL adds classes, which they do about once every 5 years or so.
Okay, well, you pretty...
Now, I don't know if I explained the problem you tripped over, but I think I did.
You actually came pretty close. The problem I was having is that I was stuck on the fact that a lot of contesters, or even in non-contest communications, one of the first things that you exchange is an RS or an RST. And I was perpetually trying to enter an RS into the station type field. So instead of putting, you know, 1 alpha or 10B or whatever, I was putting in a 5.9. Now, clearly, that's not going to go through because of your rudimentary error checking. So...
Right.
You know, the 75,000 times I fired that thing up and put in a call sign 5.9 and then a section, it would never work. So, yes, I'm an idiot. Go ahead, Richard.
Actually,
I want to hear.
That just so you know, that error checking was in the program for years before I got to it, in that section.
Yeah.
So, that, yeah, and a lot of the contest logging programs won't let you do that. N3, could go through a list, but almost none of them will allow you to enter in an RS when it's expecting a field day class.
One thing I might suggest is, if you could, on the line, you know, YFK test is done using a curses interface. So it's basically you can run it in a terminal window, or you can run it at a DOS window or whatever. So if there is some way that you could put on the line above the data entry line sort of a code or a little bit of text explaining what the data entry for that field is expecting, that might be helpful.
That's an excellent idea. That's an excellent idea. We are using that line in CW and will eventually, depending on where the voicemail goes, be using that line. It's optional right now. When you go into CW mode, and you're configured to show the message keys, it will literally show you what the function keys will be sending when you hit them, which in CW contesting, you're using your function keys for the pre-canned responses, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I'm not a big CW contester, so I was sort of looking at all of the contest logging apps that I tried from a sideband point of view.
But we could put that up, and that's an excellent idea. And, in fact, I'm writing it down now. That's on the list. And I'm always welcome to any kind of input from anybody. And
yeah.
That's how the program gets improved.
Right. Yeah. And I understand in a curses-type interface, you're sort of limited to the amount of screen real estate you have, because it's not like a graphical interface where you can put thousands of different things on there. You're limited to sort of a 80-column-wide by 24-column-tall terminal window, more or less. So you have to be a little bit spare about what you display. I kind of get that.
Absolutely. Yes.
but and I'm not even sure that I noticed anything about like what sort of data entry you expect for the different contests, even in the help file. So,
and that's true because the help file, as you notice, is also one screen, and that's on purpose. It might make sense if I can squeeze a line in the help file, I might do a conspec specific thing because you load a definition file, a DEF file, and that's not real obvious. It's kind of in the background. But that that definition file does tell you exactly what it expects. And, again, this goes back to the propeller, the dual propeller, dual shaft hat days 5 years ago when the guys that were running this program, you know, were well steeped in Unix and Linux. So that's a remnant, and we've been bashing back and forth about how or what we're going to do about to make it easier for people to write the contest files, because right now you have to really understand Unix regular expressions, or specifically Perl regular expressions, to understand what's going on there. It's there, but it's not, so I think you have a wonderful suggestion, and I think even better suggestion to put it in the help file. So if you call up help, there's a context specific line telling you what you'll be entering. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And it seems like it would be particularly useful because, YFK test does, support a lot of different contests, and people who might be just getting into contesting may not be familiar with, the exchange for a particular context. So being able to call it up just by hitting, you know, the F1 help key or whatever could be very useful. And I would like everyone to know that it's just this easy to contribute to an open source project. You too can do it.
Yes, very much so. I mean, I'm only in it because it's available to me. And I only found it because I was doing that open source thing of scratching the itch. I really needed a replacement program. And it's several thousand lines of code, and it's not always well commented. So at least 60 to 75 of those changes I've made in the last few months have been bugs. In fact, the most recent change was a Ben Coleman, NJ8J, in Atlanta, submitted a fix for the rake graph. And when he submitted it, I found two other problems. So... So there were three bugs fixed in the last couple of updates, and it has to do with the rate score, how it does the rating.
All right. Well, let me ask you two questions you can answer.
Sure.
Because I don't want to forget either one of them. The first one is, we've kind of talked about how it looks on the front end. So, A, what's it written in the back end? And B, what other contributors to the project, other than you, are sort of still active in its development?
Okay. YFK is pretty much non-active in the development. He still supports the software repository where you get the program, but he's, for all intents and purposes, out of the loop. Some of the earlier developers I've talked to, I'm going to answer these in reverse order. WS6Z or W, yeah, something like that. Fellow out in the West Coast. He still has a lot of good ideas for it. He's a professional programmer. He helped contribute to it early on, and in fact, he encouraged Fabian, DJ1YFK, to put up the software repository so other people could contribute. I think DR1, is that right? I'm trying to think of the fellow's name in Portugal. He's actually in the Portugal military. Gosh, what's his name? It's David Quintel, and he's a Portugal. The call escapes me for the moment. He contributed heavily to the rig control interface and the WinKey interface. There's been some fellows working on the CW Daemon interface for CW King. So we support both the USB WinKeyer and the serial parallel port King. I mentioned NJHJ. And myself, and I'm probably leaving off three or four people. You can find out all their names by going through the software repository. So there's quite an extensive list of people that contribute to it. I'm just the last in a long chain, and So what was the first question? I answered the second one first. What was the first question?
Now, see, I asked them together, so because I knew I was going to forget.
Right. Well, I remember now. What it's written in? It's written in Perl, P-E-R-L. And it's a wonderful language. It neither compiles nor integrates. It runs on the fly. It's kind of like a scripting language. It does actually compile the code. That 2 or 3 second delay, it's actually running through the thousands of lines of code and setting up the program in binary fashion each time you start the program. So there's about a 2 or 3 second delay. You add another second or so if you add in rig control or the keying interface, and it's firing those up. And those are running on binary programs. But the rig, it's Perl. And it's been around since the early 90s. It's a wonderful language. And in fact, it's pretty, if you program, it's pretty easy to look at the code and see what's going on.
All right, excellent. Well, I'm quite familiar with Perl. I just never bothered to look under the hood. I just did the, you know, the download, the make install, or if you don't even need to do that. You just run it because it is Perl. And as long as you have a Perl interpreter installed on your machine, it just sort of runs. So very, very simple.
Yeah, depending on the Linux distro, to get the keying up, you might have to add a package or two. Ncurses is sometimes split out from the main Perl, so they call those modules in Perl, and almost every distribution has a way of loading those. The documentation is pretty straight ahead about what modules you're going to need or what you're going to have to go look for.
But, right. One nice thing about the Debian distributions that I'm familiar with is a lot of the Perl modules that you might have to go to Pear to get are actually built as Debian packages. So installing the extensions.
And in any distribution, it's always best if it's packaged to install the package.
Right.
Don't go to Perl directly. Yeah.
Because you can get conflicts that way. If you download it through the Pear interface, you can forget that it's there, and then you download a conflicting version, and you can get all kinds of weird behavior. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So use Synaptic or Software Center or whatever you're going to use. So, and by the way, I have this running now on Arch Linux and Ubuntu personally, and I have it running under several different versions of Ubuntu. And it's pretty much seamless. The only time I run into really goofy stuff is when I'm running it on a terminal on top of a terminal window on top of some kind of display manager, display environment on top of X. And then the F12 or F10 or F1 or F11 key will be in conflict. And it's pretty easy to change that within the various terminal programs that you're running if you're running a graphics environment. Nice thing is that you can blow it up to fill up your screen when you do that pretty easily.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And GNOME 3 and the GNOME shell tend to favor the full screen modes for most applications anyway, so you sort of get that by default.
Yeah. And I want to thank you guys for all the publicity you've done. I know some of it's been strange, but you helped the program along a lot with where I was going in terms of ideas and stuff. And some of the comments you've made were quite humorous. I didn't take them personally.
Okay, well, that's excellent.
I never took them personally.
We do like the application. There's no question about that. And we've talked about it more than a few times because contest logging happens to be one of those topics that comes up a great deal, and we feel like we need to address it as often as we can. Now, I'm going to go ahead and give Richard a shake here. Are you awake, dude, or what?
Well, yeah, I was looking up the score on the games and nobody in the chat room watching it.
Okay, well, since you're, ostensibly a part of this program, do you have any questions for Bob or what?
Oh, I'm invited?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, actually, he's covering most of it. I'm not much of a log guy, okay? I started just before everybody started doing it on computer, and my first log book was a steno pad. And I still stick to that philosophy for the most part. I do have a little bitty, Xlog or something like that, that I put the stuff in eventually because it does save it as an ADF file. And most of my, in fact, I use a spiral notebook for most of my record keeping. That's how I can tell you, Bill, we talked on the phone in February, between February 28th and February or March 6th.
That's right.
You called me late in the evening. I was on my way home from work. I had to go past the bar with all the drunks on the S-curves and nearly died.
Now, you must have a really thick notebook if you've got all these details.
Oh, I have stacks and stacks of spiral notebooks just laying around all over the place because I have
a legacy. When you die?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like that scene in Seven. I don't know if you've ever seen the film Seven. Mm-hmm. You'll go in the room and there's like all these composition books all over the place.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not going to touch that. I would like to take a moment and tell you guys where I'm going with the IFK test. Now that we're at the point where there's probably a lot more bugs, but they're fairly well hidden. There's a few things that people want to correct, some great ideas like what I got tonight. And there is what I mentioned where I wanted to, make it easier for other people to, because right now to create a contest, you have to come to somebody that's, the half dozen or so people that are very familiar with YFK tests, and they'll create a file for that contest. But it's very hard to do it on your own. I want to correct that, but where we're really going with it, what we've been talking about is putting it on a USB stick, not as a live USB stick, but on a USB stick so that the application, all the modules, everything is there, all the rig control and everything. And you just plug it in a USB slot and you boot off that and you run it off that. And so that you, if you don't want to install Linux, you don't have to. And what I've been playing with in particular is how to make the USB stick not behave like a live distro, where you're running out of memory and you've got the squash file system and the overlays, and it's a big ugly mess. Those live CDs, they're great for distributing a particular Linux upgrade or distribution or install disk, but they're not very friendly for what I want to do. So I've been working on a different way of doing it, and it actually treats the USB stick as if it was a hard drive. There's no effective difference to the operating system or anything else. It doesn't care whether there's a hard drive in the machine or not. Completely ignores the hard drive and completely runs off the USB stick. It's just a hard drive, and so it would be like a distribution of YFK tests. See, you could go out on a field day situation or a group situation or even just a shelf in the ham chat and just plug in the USB stick and you'd be all set to go. And that's the next place, and we're hoping to have that ready either late this fall or early next spring.
Have you guys looked at, out of curiosity, doing something where you have distributed instances of YFK tests logging to a central location, like I think it's the N3MM logger?
N1MM?
N1MM, yeah.
The networking? Yeah, there's and that goes back into the 90s. There's been some kind of networking generally available. That is interesting. Some people love it. Some people hate it. It really has two uses, as near as I can tell. One is so that you have a backup somewhere else of whatever you're doing, in case you run out of battery and it crashes and so forth, where you're logging. The other thing is so somebody else can see what you're doing. And sometimes that second one is a curse. Like, I don't want to see on my screen what somebody else is doing necessarily. I'm interested in myself. The rudiments of coding for that were put in years ago. And I don't know whether it was YFK or that fellow in California, WS6E. I'm not sure, but one of them put in networking, and the code is still there. It's commented out, but when you download the code, it's all there, or at least the ability to pass packets back and forth. And if you look at the actual log itself, the .yfk file that's generated when you're logging, you'll notice that there's something. It'll log an STN1, and that's station one, and it's it's kind of like a placeholder in the log that's existed for years, so you can identify which network station did that log entry.
Okay. I know a lot of people like the way, well, at least the ones that have talked to me anyway, via email or at conferences or whatever, have sort of liked the distributed nature of N1MM and the ability to log into a sort of aggregate of all the people who are doing logging. And I haven't really, since that's a Windows-only application, it doesn't work real well under Wine. In fact, I don't think it works at all. I haven't really had a chance to explore it. So I don't know exactly what it does, but I know it's a feature that the hams that I've talked to like. So the fact that it's,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of in there but doesn't work yet means there might be a future for it in YFK test.
It would be really nice if by next spring, when we're melding all this onto a USB stick, that was be part of it. The big problem, and I went out and did field day, and this is like a for instance, but I did field day this year initially with the what we call here in Albuquerque the 5A group, which is kind of like a bunch of misfits that get together. We had six stations running, but it only lasted 4 hours. But it's a great deal of fun. The guys are great. It's a great meal. And I ran 20 CW. We had a 15 CW, a 6-meter CW station. We had 40-meter voice and 20, 40, and I think 15-meter voice stations. So we had some stations up and running. It was a lot of fun. We didn't network. Nobody cared. But the neat thing was is that we went out. I went and met up with another group, and we scored great, I think, in the top five in the nation, W5UR, which is the local DX club here in Albuquerque. And they put on quite a show. It's the first year I worked with those guys, and got there around dinner time. Had a great dinner. Wonderful steak dinner. They had every imaginable piece of logging software you can imagine. None of it was networked, and none of it was the same. But because they had ADIF and Cabrillo, they all put it back together later. That kind of is a bad thing. There's no backup, but you know, they had, including the VHF and digital stations, they had two, three. At one point, they had six or seven stations on, eight stations on. I think there were eight different programs running. It was a general free-for-all. So even when all the machines are running Windows, not everybody gets the same level software installed. So that was one of the goals in going to this USB thing. Just show up with your computer. We'll take care of it from there. And it makes it real simple. I happen to appreciate N1MM for what it is, but there's a lot of things it does that I can't stand, like needing a mouse. One of the things YFK test does that a lot of programs do is that you see all the sections on field day, and when you work a section, it changes color, which is kind of a neat feature. It does that on a per band mode basis. On N1MM, you can get a display that shows you all five bands at the same time in all the sections, and it's so tiny that you can't see it. So a lot of the features kind of are lost on me because they just get in the way or they're not usable. It's too small. The what we were talking about earlier, and I think it was you, Russ, that brought it up, but the idea that there's only so much space on a screen for stuff, well, one of the detractions to a Windows-like environment is you can misuse that space. And I'm not saying N1MM misuses it, but you can get into some options where it's not helpful. And that's being polite. So I try really hard. I'm trying to hold back on how complicated the program gets, because in reality, if it gets as feature-laden as N1MM, then it's no longer user-friendly, in my opinion.
No, I would tend to agree. I sort of like the basic layout and the fact that you can either run it at the console level or inside a terminal window, and it's just as effective. And, of course, without all the graphics overhead, it makes the interface very quick. So that's another advantage.
It's snappy, yeah.
All right, Richard, do you have anything else? I think we've...
We lost Richard?
No, I think he's here somewhere.
Hello.
Yes. We're kind of leaving. Yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you're there.
All right. Do you have anything else to contribute to this conversation, or should we let Bob let people know where they can find YFK Test and where they can contact him if they've got any great suggestions for its future?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, y'all were talking about the networking deal a while ago. You know, more and more people are wanting to network for field day. I had a couple questions sent to me about that back before field day. Unfortunately, I was busy and didn't get back to him in time, and I'm sure he's talked badly about me on his show, but that's okay.
No, I haven't.
No, not you.
Do you want me to? Because I can if you want me to.
Let me tell you something. I don't have a problem with talking about me, because I know if they're talking about me, they're leaving everybody else alone. That's the way I look at it. And my skin is so thick. I mean, you could like make a pair of boots out of it. I mean, it's pretty thick. But no, actually, YFK Test, what I would like to say to the listeners, okay, kids, here it is, time for y'all to throw some work in on this, is when you get the information on where to find it and who to talk to and everything else, go out, download it, work with it, find out what's wrong with it, do your best to break it.
Absolutely.
And when you do, send that information in so that the program can be improved. See, that's one of the things we don't talk about near enough on this show, is that you can either contribute by programming, you can contribute by sending money to a project, or you can contribute by sending bug reports. Go out and break the damn software and send the information to the developer. So what I would probably say is, why don't you give them your information on how they can pick up a lovely copy of this wonderful software and get in touch with you when they break it?
Best place to go to find out all the information, because the YFK pages at DJ1YFK, the web pages, are incorrect as to its status, where it's at. If you want the latest version, and you really do want the latest version, it's 0.0.10. And it's only available through subversion repositories. And I know that's a big bunch of words. Here's where you go to find out what you need to know to be able to download it and run it. And that's B. Finch. That's Boy, French, India, Nancy, Charlie, Hotel, bfinch.net. And if you go there and go to the first item, it says YFK test. And you'll see a thing that says Read Me. And you a link for README, and you go to that README link, and that'll take you on the progressive stages to downloading it and running it. And that's the best way to handle it. And that takes you direct, doesn't take you in any roundabout way. It's the most direct way we have right now. We're looking into changing that, but currently that's where to get it. And as far as I'm concerned, for the next couple of years at least, that's where you'll go when we put together the USB stick. You'll go there as well, or you'll be directed from there. And you'll find out a little bit more about me in the process, because that's my personal website.
All right. Does that cover it for you, Richard? I think I'm about out of questions.
Oh, yeah. I really don't have a lot of questions, because like I said, it's hard for me to speak intelligently on loggers, and most especially contest loggers, because I don't contest. And because I use one little login program, so I can get all my contacts into one file, and that's my main goal, is get them all into one file. And while the contact's going on, I normally write it down in my little spiral notebook with the world-famous clicking pen. So, yes, people, you finally found out there is an actual use for that other than driving Russ nuts.
Oh, that's funny.
I also keep That's track funny. Of phone calls that nearly kill me in my spiral notebook.
And I'm sorry to have to do this, Bob, but I'm going to have to give you a demerit for not using the international radio code words for the letters.
Oh, okay.
Leave him
what
alone.
What is it? Bravo. Okay. We'll do it right. Bravo. What is F? I don't even know.
Foxtrot.
Bravo, Foxtrot, India. I say Nancy.
November.
Charlie Hotel. .net.
November Charlie Hotel.
Is that close?
No.
Is that close?
Bravo Foxtrot, right. India, November Charlie Hotel. November Echo Tango.
Excellent.
See, he'd be
a CW guy.
He'd be mean again.
I did it nicely, but he still gets a demerit.
What's the phonetic for N in CW?
N.
Be a bunch of CW operators having coffee in the morning. Be 5 a.m. at the corner convenience store where they have some chairs and stuff. My wife calls it he's going to end up having to badger this. My wife calls it the dead pecker bench. And they'll be sitting around there looking at each other going, na, 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 na.
All right.
Oh, good Lord. The show's starting to progress down that down that dark path one more time.
Oh, my God. Well, you guys have been great. Thank you for the interview and the promotion. I can't thank you enough. It really has been special.
You bet. And, you know, I know we have programmers and stuff like that that listen to us, and they need to get off their butts. They get this show for free. They can at least go over to some of these projects and contribute a little piece of programming here, a bug report there, you know, something. I mean, Russ can't do all the work.
I can certainly provide a suggestion or two, which I've already done. So I feel good about myself right now.
Well, Richard lazy, so he don't do no work, so Russ has to do it.
Well, there you go. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Oh. Well, Bob, thank you for coming by.
Well, thank you for having me. This is great.
You bet. And remember, when we start running low on material, you're on the callback for low material list.
Well, great. Thank you. We can talk about rockets and some of my other stuff then.
Oh, rockets. I love rockets.
Yes, I'm a rocket scientist.
I love anything that blows up. Well, let me ask you while you're here then. What do you think about the Dragon?
The Dragon.
The Dragon spacecraft. SpaceX's deal.
Oh, those folks.
Do you keep up with that?
Sort of. I mean, I read the papers. Most of the stuff I'm playing with now, oddly enough, in the last year, I've been playing with the ham radio.
Wait a minute. Before you go any further, please don't tell us anything that there's going to be guys in dark suits and sunglasses going to show up at the studio.
Well, no, they won't.
Okay, go ahead.
But we're using 433 megahertz, and we're running 10 milliwatts, and we're doing wideband data transmission from rocket flights. Onboard telemetry, and it's fascinating project. And been playing with that. There's a new company. A couple of hams started it. They're also Linux programmers of very big note. I'm small potatoes. They're big stuff. And they started a company called Altus Metrum, and I was their very first customer. And they've been selling stuff commercially and industrially. And I don't know if the military is using it. I wouldn't know one way or the other. I imagine in a roundabout way they might. But we've been launching these things up 30,000, 40,000 feet and getting data tracking using the ham bands. And that's a lot of fun. So that's another endeavor of mine that I've been using ham radio for, spending some time with. I don't write the code, but I give them a lot of feedback. And I wrote the original documentation package, and they're still using that in one form or another. So I helped contribute to that project. That's also an open source and open hardware project. You can buy it pre-made, but you can look at all the software code and everything. And that's kind of a fun project. And it's live telemetry data. And it's very spooky because you can, if you've got an internet access from your launch site, you can push a rocket up and it's somewhat delayed. It's delayed a few seconds, but it'll actually track the flight on a Google, using Google Maps. It'll track the flight for you over Google Maps on your computer while it's in flight.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, you know, I haven't even messed with it in I don't know how long. I used to, my father always wanted to get on the satellites, and my path through radio is a little different, but I was always, always fascinated with the tracking programs and stuff like that, you know, picking up the telemetry signals off the AMSATs and trying to decode it and all that other good stuff. And that's one of those things that I may get back into at some point. I do have a radio that'll do that kind of stuff and everything. But anyway, yeah, that's the deal. See, we may have to bring you back on for that. You well, never know.
Terrific. Here's the thing. I got to jump in here. I started looking at the Altus Metrum site after you mentioned it, and yeah. I see on here that there's a very well-known personality who's involved with this project, and that's B. Dale Garby. And I have to ask if you know him.
I've known him for a long time, yes.
Okay, well, do me a favor, and can you try and get him to do an interview with us? Because I would love to talk to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll mention it. He's in Managua right now, or last time I checked last week. So.
Well, okay. Next time he's not in Central America, see if he can.
He travels for a living, and I mean, he travels big time.
Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, but Bedell and I met through Lyle Johnson, and I knew Lyle from the Tapper Project, and he introduced me to Bedell. First time I met Bedell was at Dayton, and this goes back 9 years. And he showed up again at our local Rocket Society's February launch in 2010. And I said, I know you. And he looked at me and he said, I know you too. And so, yeah, I've known Bedell for a while, although it's only in the last couple of years with Altus Metrum that we've become a lot closer simply because we're both working on the project. It's his and Keith's project, and I'm just kind of small potatoes on the sidelines.
Really. Well, I've been to many an open source and computer conference in which Bedell has, been present or done a presentation or whatever, and I've never actually got a chance to talk to him much, and I didn't even know he was a ham, although I see that he's KB0G, so it would be great if we could get to talk to him on the show. I'd love to talk to him about Linux and open source and rocketry and everything else. And maybe we can get you on at the same time and have like a big old round table or something. It'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, that'd be fascinating. That'd be fascinating. It really would.
And so we're always begging. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Bedell's been great to me on the Altus Metrum project. He's been a great guy to buy stuff from and work with.
Well, see, that's the deal. We're always begging. We're the kind of folks that like try to make friends with people's friends, so we have people to come on the show and stuff like that. We're bad that way.
Bad. Yeah.
Well, we try and network and use our influence wherever possible.
I will be happy to send you guys. I won't do this for everybody, but for you guys, I'll send it. If you download the Ubuntu packages for Altus Metrum and install them, I'll send you flight files, or I'll show you where to go to get flight files, because with the latest versions of software, you can actually take a flight and rerun it as if it's actually flying, and you can run the flight, and it's a way of testing the software, but it's also a way of going back and reestablishing data on the flights, because it charts the flights, it does all kinds of wonderful stuff, the software. And that's the software realm of it is Keith Packard, and I don't really know Keith except from his reputation that preceded him at Altus Metrum, but we've never actually physically met. But if you ever get a chance to talk to Keith Packard, he's the guy who he was team leader for the X project, not the Rocketry X, but the X that underlines all the graphics in Linux and Unix world. He was project leader for that.
Oh, then we need to talk to him too.
Yeah. So they're great. I mean, when I have software issues or stuff, I talk to Keith. Keith's been wonderful. He's another great guy. And, they've both got this crazy chromosomal problem with me where we like to launch rockets. So,
well, that's okay. There are problems in the world that are far worse than that one.
What, launching rockets?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
As long as you don't launch them at anybody, that's the part that worries me.
They're not missiles.
If I hear a rocket come whistling at me, I'm going to be upset.
Well, the funny thing is when they get going good. I know, I'm pretty sure Keith does this, but I know Bedell and I do. We like to fly above the sound barrier on a regular basis. So we hit them pretty hard with rocket fuel.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So we're regularly breaking the sound barrier. The funny thing is we're within the cone, so we don't typically hear it. Yeah, it's kind of neat. And we get to stay on the ground when we're doing it. That's the other weird thing. But, yeah, no. And so, and by the way, that software is all written in Linux. It's Java code, but it's compiled and all the firmware code and all that's done in a Linux framework, and specifically Debian for those two.
Well, that's excellent. And while I feel like we could talk about this forever, I think we've gone just a hair afield of our original topic. So
we can keep him on the phone all night.
No, I think we probably could if we tried, but we probably need to move on because I've already got one topic I'm going to have to drop for this episode. So unfortunately, I think we're going to have to let you go.
Well, thank you for everything, guys.
Oh, you bet. And yeah. And Russ will be contacting you to like find something else out so that we can talk about that too.
Definitely.
That's terrific.
Very much so. Well, thanks, Bob.
Well, you guys have a great evening.
I thought you were going to come on here and give me hell about my tribulations with YFK test, but I'm really glad you came on and we really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. So thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome. And have a great evening.
You too.
You bet. You have a great evening too.
All right, 73s.
All right, 73. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Well, that, everybody, was Bob, W9YA, Whiskey 9 Yankee Alpha, yes. And he's the maintainer and apparently lead developer on the YFK test project.
Where's my clicking pin?
Yeah, so you can go to bfinch.net, Bravo Foxtrot India, November Charlie Hotel, November Echo Tango, and find out all the information you need to know about where to get, how to compile, and how to use YFK test for your next contest. So thanks very much to Bob for coming on to the program, and I think we're finally done with segment number one. So what do you think? I play some music and we'll come back and I guess we'll just hit feedback because that went a lot longer than I thought it was going to.
Okie dokie.
All right, everybody. Well, we got a little bit of music here, and Richard, I gotta run to the liquor store, so when I get back we'll carry on, but in the meantime we've got a song that I was supposed to play last episode. This one is by Olga Scotland. And I don't know if she's Scottish or not, but her name is Scotland anyway.
Olga Scotland.
Olga Scotland. That sounds like a Norwegian or a Swedish Scotsman. Scotswoman. Something like that. Anyway, this one is called Ancient. And it was a good track, and I like it a lot. So as soon as we're done with this little bit of musical interlude, we'll be back on the other side. We'll talk some feedback. Thank you.
Okay, kids, and we're back. We're going to talk a little bit about the RTL SDR to fill some time in, but we had a thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable interview with Bob, and it filled up a little time. So we're going to try and get through this feedback, and that way y'all will have made it to work. You don't have to listen to a piece of it on the way home. Most of you, if you're listening to it as you go to sleep, you're probably asleep already. And all that good stuff. Okay, so first up, we got an email from Rich, KB0BJT. Says, hi, guys. I might be a bit late on this, but here is a neat field day logging program written in Python with networking capabilities for multiple stations. And he gives the web address. It's http://www.fdlog.info. And here is the Java-based JL logging program, which is available over at qsl.net/w1jq. Thanks for a great show, Rich, KD0BJT. Now, for those of y'all who don't know, Rich is a fellow podcaster, and he's been helping us out on a lot of suggestions lately and some other stuff. But have you had a chance to look at this FD log? Russ?
Unfortunately, I have not. The thing of it is, Rich has been very interested in logging, and it seems like Linux or Linux-compatible apps of late. He has sent us the information here about the contest loggers, and he's also sent us a distribution for ham radio that he's created, all of which we are going to talk on a future episode about.
I've already threatened to make him come on the show.
Well, I hope he can come on the show, because Rich is an entertaining guy. You know, he's one of those fellow podcasters, like you've already said. He's there with his son over at the Low SWR podcast. I got a chance to talk to him at Hamvention, and it would be nice to actually have him on the show and talk about some of these things that he's letting us know about, since they don't seem to be recording over there all that much. We will talk about these applications that you mentioned, Rich. I haven't had a chance to look at them. Richard hasn't either. So if anybody wants to go out on their own and check them out, go for it. We give you the URLs. They'll be in the show notes. And we'll do a review of both of them probably in the next two or three episodes of Linux in the Ham Shack. So stay tuned for that.
Well, I did go over to the FD Log website and take a little bit of a look around. That's another one of those worthy projects, y'all. One thing I didn't mention earlier is that not only if you're a programmer can you help, not only can you break stuff and help, but a lot of times people really desperately need help with the documentation on their software. FD Log's one of those things. YFK Log could probably use some help with it. In fact, I don't know many open source programs that are fully done up on documentation. Some of them are really well documented, but they're still not completely documented. And then some have barely any documentation at all. And yes, Rich did send us a copy of, he is building an amateur radio operating system based on Debian. I was looking at it this afternoon. It's got quite a few useful programs in there. He tells me he's been having a few bugs pop up. He's been squashing them as fast as he can. And when we get to talk to him again, we will find out where it is. And that way, yeah, those of you that are interested can download it and work with it some. And see if y'all can't help him work through some of these problems. Does that sound about right, Russ?
Sounds good to me. And one thing I will say is I just jumped over to the fdlog.info website. And it looks like the latest version, 1.48, was last updated in the middle to late part of 2010. So I would suggest that it's not under active development anymore. That doesn't mean it's not an application you shouldn't use, because maybe it was perfect as of 2010. Well, no, I see that there was a new version released in 2011, but it's still a year old now. Just keep that in mind if you try it out. So. Obviously I guess he's working on it, maybe just slow.
Yeah, about a year ago it looks like. And you know, that's the problem with some of these projects. If there's only one person working on them, they move slow. Dan over at D-Rats was having that problem until he got a couple of guys on board that could help him out a little bit, squashing bugs and things like that. The website's pretty nice, and that says a lot for me, even though it is over at Google. But y'all go over there and check it out and kind of get back to us on it. We're going to try and take a look at it, but, you know.
And FDLog is a graphical application. It runs under X. It's written in Tickle. So, you know, just keep that in mind if you want to try it out.
What the heck is Tickle?
Tickle. TCL. It's a language.
Oh, that's okay. I have enough trouble with English.
All right. Well, thanks, Rich, for that suggestion. We will definitely look up to them, and we'll follow up on your ham radio distribution project as well. So what's next on the list?
Well, let me see. There was a comment on the website from Leaf, like we had it out. KC8RWR. Leaf, let's see. Did you guys see this? And he gives a YouTube URL, which is far too long and complex for me to say on the air. Go check out the show notes. It's at YouTube. But what it boils down to is it's a tutorial on GNU Radio. A GNU radio tutorial series based on those RTL radios. This is definitely on my to-do someday pile now. I can't wait till you guys talk more about it, too. I'm wondering if I stuck an NE602 in front of it, how it would do on HF. It's too bad that it's only receive only, but then most of the benefits of SDR are at the receiver anyway, right? When compared to most of the alternatives except soft rock, though with the $1,000 or more you save going with the RTL, you should be able to buy or build one heck of a non-SDR transmitter to go with it. I think it was Richard, or was it Russ, that said he didn't want to have to lug around a computer. I agree. I wonder how well a Raspberry Pi would run GNU Radio. And then he gives the web address for Raspberry Pi. Y'all can hunt that up on Google. Once again, check the show notes. And, wish I wouldn't write them so long because I start getting wore out towards the end.
Oh, and by the way, that comment about lugging a radio around, that was Richard. And let me go ahead and read you the geek version of what an NE602 is for those people like myself who don't know what one is. The NE62 is a Signetics, that's Philips Components, monolithic integrated circuit containing a double balanced mixer, an oscillator, and an internal voltage regulator in a single 8-pin package. So there, and you've had your geek quotient for the evening.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah, I didn't understand a word of what I just read, but I'm sure somebody does.
Well, the computer gods are against me. I was going to go over there. it's got stuff for making a transmitter in it.
I don't know if it does or not. It's one of those things. It's a little piece of silicon that does some stuff.
Yeah, and what I said was, you know, I don't get particularly happy about carrying it, but once again, I don't want to carry a computer because you travel light when you've been doing MCOM for so many years. You take what it takes. You take what you need to get the job done in the quickest, easiest fashion. You get out in the middle of nowhere, power is a consideration. And I know I don't get but 2-3 hours on the batteries on my laptops. So anyway, y'all go check his stuff out. And thank you, Leaf. It's been a while since we heard from you. You know, we were getting things so often at one point to when you all of a sudden stopped, we thought you maybe had a problem. So with that, we'll move on to the next email.
Yes, I think I'll read this one because I don't want you to have a stroke, okay?
Yeah, because it's a long one.
Yeah, it's a long one. Okay, we got an email. This one's from Dave, Mike Zero, Delta Charlie Mike, over in the West Midlands in the UK. Dave's written in before, but he's got some things to say again, apparently. He says, "Hey, Rich and Russ, well, I've not long come out of the hospital after a hydrocephalus shunt revision stroke operation, and I'm finally getting back into catching up with all my podcasts. And since rebuilding my home server, which is now hooked up to my surround sound system and 32-inch LCD TV, well, it's made my listening more pleasurable, even if the wife finds my hobbies boring. The server is an old Packard Bell Pentium 4 3.2 gigahertz desktop with 2 gigabytes of RAM and almost 1 terabyte of storage, which I had given to me. Well, it must be nice to have that kind of stuff given to you. And it's running currently Ubuntu 10.04 LTS with Tonido for web sharing, which allows me to listen to my podcast via my Acer Aspire 1 AO751H netbook running Jolly Cloud and Android devices while I'm at either the Outlaws, or my parents. And I do also share the LHS podcasts along with all the others I download with other hams. So that's pretty cool. Anyhow, talking about GNU Radio, I have a friend who runs the Edis USRP SDR for transmit and receive, including the 60-watt amplifier on VHF UHF, and he's running it all under Linux, and we're hoping to get Packet and APRS running between us soon. It's an impressive system, and it's fairly easy to use. He also uses it for satellites up into the SHF frequencies. He's also got the FunCube dongle, and damn, it's not just for receiving satellites. He's hoping to lend it to me at the next Packet radio meeting, so look out. I'll let you know what I've been doing with it besides receiving VHF aircraft frequencies. I'm sure the FunCube dongle coupled to a Raspberry Pi would make a great cheapish SDR receiver. Before I finish, I've just purchased myself a Yaesu FT817ND, and I'm hooked up on the whole QRP lark and running PSK31 and RIDI through it using FLDigi is great. I've also converted a few more hams over to Linux, so the future is looking bright. Keep up the great work, and I'll keep listening along with the others. And that's from Dave, Mike Zero, Delta Charlie Mike, from Dudley in the West Midlands in UK. So, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I only like apple pie and chocolate pie. And this is the second one we've had talking about Raspberry Pi.
Yes. Well, yeah, I've actually...
I know. Anyway, it sounds like he's really got it happening over there. I wish I had the cash to invest or just to throw down on some of his stuff just so I could play with it. Stuff I've seen over at the Edis website is very impressive. Very impressive.
Well, the prices are also impressive. That's the only thing I don't particularly like about the Edis products is how expensive they are.
Maybe they're the Apple of SDR.
Well, maybe they are, but the thing of it is, I'd rather have a non-SDR receiver that I can spend half as much on and actually get a transmitter to go with it.
Well, this is true. This is true. But you can't fault people for using this. We're going to end up going that way anyway, for the most part. You know, you can't fight the future. You cannot fight the future. I have tried and got my butt whooped more than once.
Well, and the prices, of course, will come down as these things get more popular and all of that. So we can hope it goes in that direction and becomes more economical for the average ham to try out some of this SDR stuff. But when we get around to talking about RTL SDR, which hopefully will be in the next episode, you'll learn all about the cheap ways you can do at least receive only SDR. And for a little bit extra money, you can transmit and get up to a pretty decent output power with an amplifier. So we will get to that. Sorry we ran out of time this time, but I don't know. Was there anything else we needed to talk about Dave's email here?
No, I don't think so. It's very, very fact-filled and feature-rich.
And obviously his friend, whoever his friend is, the guy who owns the Edis and the FunCube dongle and whatever else he mentioned there, clearly has more money than he has a right to, and I would like some. So go ahead and go over to lhspodcast.info, click on the donate button, send us some of your extra cash. We could certainly use it. And when we get up to $1,000 or $2,000, we may buy an Edis receiver strictly for educational purposes, of course.
That's right, because we are not Chris Matthew, and we are not going to borrow anything to test it, because if it gets broke, we have to buy it.
That's right.
There you have it. Yeah, he done that more than once, come think of it. You got kind of throwed on that SHF, didn't you?
Well, I was expecting to read just about any other letter there except for S, and yeah, it kind of tripped me up.
That's the area between UHF and microwave.
Yeah, super high frequency. I get it. I mean, I just, you know, don't see it very often written out.
Actually, a lot of lower microwave bands are SHF. Anyway, okay. So last but not least, we have a comment on the website from David K0AZ. And he just comments that the Edis daughter boards, it looks like the transmitters run anywhere from 50 milliwatts to 200 milliwatts, depending on the frequency. I found the info about halfway down on this page, which is apparently, yeah, their daughter board subpage. Y'all go over to the Edis website. I think we give it out before. I'll give it again. www.ettus.com. And y'all go roam around the website and look around. So how about that, Russ?
Yeah, we did. Bill found it for us when we were talking about it the last time we were talking about the SDR stuff. And did, I think, put in the show notes for the last show the 50-watt to 200-milliwatt limit on the Edis products. You know, which makes me think, because those things are $1,000 plus, you know, I think they went up to on the order of $1,600 or so for some of those. And then we talked about the, I don't remember which product it was, but it was the one that they only had the one kind left of that cost about $80 or something like that. And even that had a 1-watt transmitter in it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. You just got to kind of be careful about it. But like I said, we'll hit on that topic real hard when we talk about RTL-SDR, and I know when we get done with that show, everyone's going to run out and buy a cheap SDR, and we're going to start an SDR revolution. I know it.
Well, there you have it. I mean, Richard, y'all know Richard, like the guy that doesn't like change. And I've got an HF rig that once I finally got it the way I wanted it, it was about $1,300. Now, yeah, pay $1,000 for something. Well, let's put it this way. There was a Pactor controller that you had to have for Windlink, and they were about $1,000, and all it did was run Pactor. You plugged it into your computer, and that's what it did. You had to have a radio plugged into it. It was just a modem, and guess what? Richard ended up not staying on Windlink on HF anyway. So anyway, we will look into it and see how it goes. All right, so we've cleared the feedback list.
Well, the thing is, sorry to interrupt, but no, we have not actually cleared the feedback list, but we're just plain out of time.
I don't see no more.
No, there isn't any more in the Etherpad, but there's plenty more piled up, and we will get to it next episode. But don't take that as an opportunity not to send any more in, because we will definitely get to it. So please, if you have some feedback, make sure to send it our way.
That's right. We need to do an all feedback episode. It's been a while since we've done one of them, get all caught up.
Yeah. Well, if we have to, we will certainly do it. But, you know, it turns out it seems like you know, when we first started this podcast, we were worried about the fact that, you know, we were going to get to 100 episodes. Well, here's the thing. Every time we do an episode, we generate 4 more. So I tell you what, this thing is going to go for a long, long time.
And I was never worried. It was Chris Matthew that said, do you think there's enough information there for a podcast? And I'm like, dude, if we get to 25, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is, you know, we're up to 86, and the topic that I've been wanting to talk about for 3 episodes is getting pushed back another one. So by the time we get to it, it's probably going to be 107. And, you know, who knows, but we'll be here a while. So anyway, we're done with feedback. We had a great interview with Bob W9YA, and I think it's about time to wrap this one up. So what do you think we go on down the road?
Well, I think we ought to do that. So one of the things I want to tell you folks, I want to say, tell y'all, is things might be a little different for the next couple of months, but y'all hang in there and everything will be okay. That's a little teaser for you so you can check in next time. All right. So if you want to get a hold of me, you can contact me at kb5jbv@gmail.com. kb5jbv@gmail.com. Or come find me on the social network. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Thanks to Ping FM shutting down and turning into Seismic. You probably won't see many updates anywhere else because Seismic only does two or three things. And let's see. I don't even know where the heck I was. But send me an email. Send me a note. If you like it, don't like it. But don't make it too harsh. The really harsh ones you need to send to Bill at KB9WKA at idontcare.com. And with that, I'll toss it over to Russ, and he can give you his information.
All right. This is Russ, K5TUX. You can email us at info@lhspodcast.info. All the information you need to know about the program is at our website, lhspodcast.info. You can find Richard on the social networks. You can find me on the social networks. That'd be Google, Twitter, Identica, so on and so forth. We're out there somewhere. Please give us some feedback. Send us an email. Go to the website, leave a comment, and call us on the voice line. That's 909-LHS-SHOW, 909-547-7469. We'd like to hear your comments on the program. So thanks for tuning in once again. This has been episode number 86 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. And I'm up here between the peaks in the pine forest of north central Arkansas, and I'm going to send it back down to the very comfortable cardboard box by the Trinity River in northeast Texas, where Richard KB5JBV is going to close us out by saying,
yeah, wait till y'all figure out where I am next time. We'll see y'all later. 7-3, everybody.